All right, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you perfect.
Okay. So I am going to pass you over. There you go.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. If you could just hold on for one moment, the Honorable Mr. David Neal will be conducting a hearing, and he will be ready in just a few moments for us to move forward. So the next voice you will hear will be the Honorable Mr. David Neal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Sullivan. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay. So, would you state your full name and agency number for the record, please?
R. Sullivan, 137264, Arizona number, and 71976, New Hampshire.
Thank you, sir. You put in for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency this morning in reference to a parole hearing. I'm going to introduce the board members that will be hearing or conducting the hearing this morning. At this time, we have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is a board chairman. We have the Honorable Michael Johnson and the Honorable William Morris. My name is David Neal, and I will be the hearing room this morning. So I have a bunch of information about you. You've been here and done this, so you understand basic procedures. So I'm going to look at this information and verify it, and then we'll discuss what's been going on since your last hearing, sir. Okay? All right, so Mr. Sullivan, you're 74 years now, sir?
And 40 days.
Okay. You were surveying the last of seven sentences that a jury convicted you of in 1998. There were three counts of molestation of a child, each for 17 years and concurrent each other. The other four crimes or counts are sexual conduct with a minor, which are all 1 year, 10.5 month sentences, and consecutive to each other. From the information that I have, that you are on the very last of the four consecutive sexual conduct with minor charges. That sound correct to you, sir?
Yes, sir, right on.
Okay. So, you'll become parole-eligible on June 12th of 2019, and you're certified for this hearing, which is for regular parole, absolute discharge, on January 11th, 2019. You've appeared before the board four times in the past, and you were granted the parole the next consecutive sentence three times. The last grant was April 26, 2018, and that moved you to the final sentence, which is having an LCD date of May 17, 2020. So, as they say in the vernacular, sir, we're talking down to the wire. Getting very close to the end of your sentences. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. There's a few things on here I want to go over before we actually get back to you directly. And one of the things I noticed was $600 restitution. It was ordered, and it was talking about your 30% of earnings while you're incarcerated, and then they got another one, if you're released, then there's a time in order for two and then go to $40 a month. Have you been paying on that, sir? Because I know you've been working.
I tried when I first got here, and they said they needed a court order, and I couldn't get a court order from anybody to do it, so the payroll here wouldn't take it out. They didn't know where to send it, they said.
Okay. And the sentencing order has restitution specifically listed as having to be paid and how to be paid. Don't know exactly if they give accounting information as far as who collects the money. All right, so that's to be anticipated when either if the board should rally on parole or you got on your normal end date, then you're going to have a $40 a month restitution until paid. Virtually no criminal history prior to this issue. Very good programming, good support, no discipline record. All pretty excellent, your furniture and toys and pictures of board have been given in case of really good woodworking skills. And I pride myself on being a woodworker, but I don't know what kind of skilled as you are. So, I'm looking at my notes here, right? I'm pausing a little to make sure I don't miss something. One of the questions I want to ask you right up front, sir, and I apologize, I remember the woodworking and stuff, but I don't remember all the details of what you said the last hearing. But in the package, the pre-sentence report says that the kind of offenses you denied them completely, and it looks like up in the clip through the sentencing, you denied the offenses. Do you still deny having committed these offenses, sir?
I accept responsibility for them.
Okay. I was in the back of my mind, but I wasn't quite sure, sir. That's something we do see, and it's not that denying it initially is an unusual thing. There's a human tendency to not want to accept responsibility for serious things. We have inmates that spend a vast amount of their life in prison and they still deny doing it, and that's even after appeals and evidence and everything else. So we appreciate when someone will take the responsibility and ownership of their crimes. So I think at this time, I know we're pretty much every time you've got to come before the board, you've got to go over the offenses. And I don't know that we need to belabor specific details, but can you give the board a little bit of an idea of what was going on in your life and in your mind back at the time this all happened that would lead you down that path?
In case, I think there were a lot of factors. So some of my core beliefs, I had low self-esteem. My wife left after 21 years of marriage and moved to California. My sons were my whole life and they were all going off to college. I was lonely. I had an opportunity to take advantage of a pretty young girl who paid attention to me. And all of this led to committing these crimes along with some depression. Plus, I really think now that I'm in this treatment program here that some of my core beliefs of having a little sexual abuse history myself, I turned that into thinking that I could take advantage of other people. And I'm not a violent person, I'm kind of a manipulative person. And I would turn an innocent situation into something that it wasn't. I never had any formal sex education. I'd learned it all from books and friends, and I think that led me down the wrong path.
Okay. I heard what you said about previous sexual abuse yourself, and I'm not going to ask you for anything specific or anything about that specifically. But there is an issue that comes up a lot when people do things. They tend to take the easy way out and as another vernacular and proactive practice. So people coming from families that have adults that are substance abusers or child abusers or wife abusers or, you know, a lot of bad, bad behavior that's presented with a child over a period of time. When they get to be adults, they have to make a choice. They're going to follow the path they saw growing up, or they're going to follow a different path. So I do understand that aspect of it. If you, you know, with a previous history of that, that it could convince you to choose the wrong path. And apparently you did, but that's why we're talking to you today. So you say you're taking a program now. Was there a mental health program that helped you get a hold of your inner self?
I'm not court ordered to take the sex offender treatment program, but I applied for it in 2000 and was told by the folks here that I couldn't enter the program until I was on my last consecutive. So I waited the 18 years and then applied for the program, and I was evaluated for it. And I moved from one of the units here called South Unit to H Building, Hancock Building, and into the Sex Offender Treatment Program on July 11th, 2018. And I'm presently in that program now.
I see. Well, yeah, I mean, there's, each state has different rules about programming and stuff like that, but let's get very good to see that you have moved forward with that, because if one of the things the board looks at is sex offender treatment and how things are going like that. So you've learned a lot in that program.
I've learned a lot and I'm learning more. You know, it's a like a four-tier program. There's orientation and readiness, core, and then cycle. And I'm on my 18th group of core. And once we move from core into cycle, core and cycle run together. The entire program is like 12 to 18 months. And on January 14th, I met with Ms. Simon, who's the head of the SOP, and Ms. Tapley, who is my therapist, and asked them if they could give me some feedback on how I'm doing in the program so I could tell the board at this hearing. And they said that I was progressing really well in the program and I was doing good. And I was one of the leaders of my 6 or 7 man group. And that June or July of 2019, I should complete the program. And on December 14th of 2018, an aftercare specialist named Miss Jordan called me to her office, and when you enter the program, you have to answer all these questions, and you're evaluated on high risk and low risk and all these different plateaus. And she reevaluated me based on my participation in the program and what level I was at, and I was moved to a low risk for reoffending. And the last step of this program here is a polygraph and an administrative review committee, which is conducted by some psychiatrists and therapists and counselors.
And when I say you're doing really well, it's more than just in that class. It sounds like you have developed a very positive attitude about it and about doing what you need to do to make sure that you don't have another problem with it. So if everything goes just like exactly like you, you would be finishing that class about the time you reach your end date. Is that correct, sir? Mr. Sutton?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I had a question pop in my mind and it just popped out just as fast, if not quicker. when irregardless of whether it be because the board let you out early on board or because you missed the end date, what are your plans when you do get released, sir?
Get released, the first thing I probably have to do is go to my PO, because my first sentence of 17 flat carries a 2-year and 5-month community supervision with it. So I have to meet with the parole officer as soon as I get out. I have to get some sort of driver's license or ID card, because mine obviously are all expired. I want to apply for Social Security so I can start my Social Security benefits. I want to go to the VA and get a decent physical. Of course, I want to spend time with my sons and family and friends who supported me all these years. I'd like to visit my wife's grave at the VA cemetery. And my plans right now, if they're approved, would be to stay with my oldest son, Sean, until I can get established and get my Social Security coming and decide where I'm going to live and comply with whatever the parole officer wants me to do. And I don't do drugs or do a lot of drinking or anything like that. So, I'd like to eat some decent food and sleep in a good bed and continue my woodworking if I can, if I'm physically able to. And that's about all I would like to do when I get out. Maybe go fishing.
Okay. Now, have you planned that you'll be coming back to Arizona? Sir?
Yes, I'd be coming back to Arizona.
I'm not sure if the phone's cutting out or everything, so we'll just make sure that we both hear each other. So if you come back to Arizona, and I noticed when I was reading that, there was some probationary time tacked on the years after all the sentences were done, or when you were released. And I don't know, but the rules on that might be that you can't start serving that until you've reached the end date of your sentences, but that's, the end date is less than 6 months away, so not the time.
And on this sentence here that I'm doing right now, from what the time comp has sent me, is October 2nd of 2019 is the end date.
Well, I had a little bit earlier in the game, but that's fine. It's within a couple of months of that, and we get calculations that are done, and then there's some time to go by before hearing it. A lot of times there's a recalc, and it's a little bit different. So, but there are the authorities. So either way, even if it goes to October, you don't have very long. If you were released prior to your end date, you don't have a whole lot of time that you would be on parole before that end date. So it wouldn't, if you had 2.5 years of probation after your end date, you'd have roughly, you could have maybe as much as 3 years total of supervised release or end dates or whatever. So that's pretty good. Do you have any intention of continuing I don't know if this, after the program you're in, I don't know if it'll be after the call programming, sex offender programming, counseling, that sort of thing. Do you have intention of continuing some type of counseling like that, sir? Because you've been doing that a long time. And it's not exactly an easy transition back in after that length of time. So you have plans on continuing counseling, or do you think you don't need it?
I think I'm going to sit down with my parole officer and talk to him. In this state here, they have what they have, aftercare. And I don't know if Arizona has it or not. And if they do, I might be interested in going to some aftercare groups. And I'm not ignorant enough to think that once I get done with this program, that I'm healed or anything like that. This is an ongoing thing that I have to deal with the rest of my life. So I'm going to do whatever I have to do to make sure that this never happens again.
Okay. So So, you mentioned getting a license and everything. So, what are you going to do about learning how to use a cell phone? For? Do you have to try it? I say that, you know, in a humorous manner, because that's one of the biggest challenges to inmates when they've been in for 20, 25 years. But yeah, there was no such thing 25 years ago as a cell phone or a smartphone.
Rely on my sons and my friends to teach me how. One of the things that comes up in the program here is a lot of the people that are in my group, well, not a lot of them, there's six people in my group, and three of them are porn on the phones and on the computers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Ask those kind of questions to me, I have no idea what they're talking about,
Right. I understand that. That is, I say that humorously, because that seems to be, and I can imagine that's one of the biggest challenges when people get back out and back in the community, because our society now relies on that very, very much, and people are so into it, and they're not used to being around anybody. They can't at least navigate the phone pretty well. So they apparently have a pretty good woodworking facility there at that prison.
The best that I know of around.
Well, I mean, you make some beautiful pieces, and you can't do that. Well, you know, a long time ago, people did it without a bunch of power tools, but nowadays it's have some good power tools, or you don't make good-looking furniture, and you make some nice stuff. I say that in almost a jealous manner, because I'm in there quite the equipment to make quite that good stuff. I'm still with my fellow board members. I mean, questions at this time.
Sir, I just had a couple of questions, because I do see the difference in the sentence end date. I see one sentence end date of October 3rd, 2019, and I think we have another one of May 17th, 2020. Do you know which one is your sentence end date? Sir?
I can't hear your question.
I saw two different sentence end dates. One of them is on your documentation from there, which has a sentence end date, a release date of earned release credit date of October 3rd of 2019. Is that what you see your date is?
Yes, that's what I have.
Okay, so the program you're in now, when are you going to complete that program?
June or July of 2019.
Okay. My other question is I know you spoke of your son. If you were released, where would you stay when you came back to Phoenix, Arizona?
If I'm released on parole, I would like to try to stay with my oldest son, Sean, until I can get my Social Security and such started, and then decide if I'm going to get my own house or apartment or whatever. After my wife passed away, I had my son sell my house, so I'll have to find a place to go.
Okay, so you in communications with your son, Sean?
Pardon me?
Are you in communications with your son?
Yeah, I would try to stay with my son, Sean, if I could.
Okay, so has your son agreed to that is what I'm asking, sir?
Oh, yes, he has agreed. He's asked me to stay there.
Okay. Then it looks like we'll be applying for Medicare and your Social Security benefits?
Yes. I already got a hold of Social Security and know how much I'm going to get monthly.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, sir. I'm just looking at and making some notes. Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Sullivan?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can now.
Considering the level of trust that the state of Arizona placed in you, and you were involved in a series of crimes that involved three victims with a firm mandate, and you were receiving sexual offender treatment now, is that correct, sir?
Yes, that's correct.
What is the virtue of releasing you any sooner?
What would be the virtue?
Yes.
Releasing me on parole, you mean?
Yeah, any sooner than the sentence that was given to you, considering the number of victims and the trust that was placed in you by the state of Arizona. What is the virtue of releasing you any sooner?
Well, I think that this is the first arrest in my life that I've not caused Arizona DOC or New Hampshire DOC one problem in 21 years. I've taken every single program available starting way back in 1999. I have zero discipline history. I've had no dirty urine tests here. I've held a job since I arrived here. 6 weeks after I got here, I got a job. I've got 6,231 hours of documented work as an apprentice journeyman and a master cabinet maker. In the last 8.5 years, I've worked at New Hampshire's maximum security psychiatric unit, and that's a tricky place to work. I applied for SOT program in 2000 and was told see you in 18 years, and I've attended the program here, and I'm doing all my work and doing well. I've been separated from my family and friends for 21 years now. At my age, I'm going to be 74 in 40 days. I understand parole, I understand how it works, and I can comply with all the conditions. If you can live in here, I believe you can live on parole. And I'm willing to comply with all the state and county and, you know, requirements on registration and whatever's necessary.
So, Mr. Sullivan, I asked very direct questions, but I have to tell you that was a very complete answer. And thank you. It was very, very well stated. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Murray?
Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Neal. Mr. Sullivan, I know where you enrolled in the SOP program there in New Hampshire. Have you identified the triggers that resulted in your behavior when the offenses took place, sir? Do you know what was going on? I know that's part of some of the training that you get is they help you to identify the triggers. Have you identified the ones that resulted in you? I know you mentioned ones that perhaps you had been molested at some point, but is there any others that you have identified now, sir?
First got into the program, because you asked me that before, I did some checking on it. And once we got into that specific area on triggers, I learned that the trigger is something that happens like an event or an occurrence that sets off a chain reaction in someone. And an example of that might be if you're in a restaurant or something and someone bangs into you or bumps you, your triggered response might be he did it on purpose, when in reality he really didn't, you know. And then your behavior response might be anger. And in my particular case, I think I viewed females as a sex object. And I would often take advantage of that. And a female would look at me and I would think that it was in a sexual manner, but it really wasn't. It was an innocent act by them. And you learn the triggers in this program of beliefs, like an old belief might be, like I know what others are thinking, but a new a new belief might be that I know what I am thinking. You know, and an old belief might be I know why others are acting that way. And a new belief might be I know how I should be acting. And once you know the enemy isn't others, but rather than your beliefs and your thinking and the triggers that you have, you can progress through this recovery program.
Okay, sir. Let me just raise another question. I'm going to make an assumption is that you have not been allowed to have direct contact with the victims. Have you heard anything at all about the victims since the incident since you were incarcerated, sir?
In February 2016, I wrote letters to the victims apologizing. And since then, I've learned a little bit more about how I should have wrote them. I didn't really I didn't do a good job on apologizing the way I could not do it now. But I haven't heard anything from any of the victims other than me sending the letters to victim services through Interstate.
But you're going to be out sometime in the near future. I don't know whether we're talking about Wilson or whether we're talking about October or whether we're talking about early next year. But you're going to be out, and do you really feel, sir, in your within yourself, not what board members might feel, not what others might feel in the community, but do you feel that you're really ready to come back out in society and be a productive citizen, sir?
100%. The things that I've learned in here, the discovering empathy and compassion for victims, it's a real important factor in relapse prevention. And the subjects that we're covering in here, like porn and brain and mood disorders and sexual problems and addiction, and we have to do a geogram of our family history. We have to do a sexual chronology of every single sexual thing you've done in your entire life. You have to learn all about coping skills, and we have workbooks we have to do. The American, Community Corrections Institute, and another set of workbooks called New Headings, Crossing Boundaries. We have to learn a lot about consent. In this group, we're small groups. There's only six in my group, and we meet twice a week as a group, and then we have between 20 and 30 hours a week as homework. I hope that answered your question.
Yes, sir. I guess my final question would be, in terms of you're being released, because you're going to be released real soon, what I would say is real soon, sometime in the not too distant future. It is my belief, just by sitting on this board and in the community, sex offenders are not looked upon in society in a favorable manner. There are going to be some who are not happy. I know you plan to live with your son if that's approved by the Department of Corrections. But are you prepared to be looked at sometime in what might be considered in a negative way because of this offense, or are you prepared to live and not have any problem by living that type of life, sir?
Sure, I am, and I'm willing and able to prove myself every day.
Okay, well, thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Any other questions for the board? At this time, then, I am going to move to the people that are here as supporters for you, sir. And we'll see if anyone would like to speak. And then from that point, we'll be back to you, okay?
Hey.
All right. We're going to hear in support. Would somebody like to speak on behalf? And it'll be up to you all to decide in a order if there's more than one. When you come to the podium, please state your name and then tell the board what you'd like to tell us.
Good Yes, my name is Dennis Short. I'm retired from the Arizona Department of Corrections. I worked there 32 years. I worked with all different custody levels. Mr. Sullivan was my supervisor on several occasions, and I wanted to speak on behalf of his character. He has always been a motivator of other people, both in the community and also within the prison structure. He created and got approved the fire crew at the Perryville Prison and had an inmate fire crew established. He had an incredible rapport with the number of inmates and the staff that he worked for. He also has done pretty much the same thing within the prison structure, even though there are a lot of things that went against him. One of the Arizona Department of Corrections employees that went to that state after he had retired here happened to go to that particular prison, and he was not happy with Mr. Sullivan and had him moved from the custody level he was in to a higher custody deliberately because he didn't like it. And that was not because of behavior or anything else. He was returned to that facility he's at currently based on the fact that the supervisors there wanted him to return because he was a good employee who they could rely on. So he has endured some stress based on issues that people had with him, and has done a good job for many supervisors he's worked for there, so that they know they can rely on him, and he's a trusting person. He had emphasized that he had participated in the program to the greatest extent possible. There are people who begin that program who don't finish it for 2 or 3 years because they don't want to be involved in it, and they don't want to participate in it. And it's an example of him attempting in every way that he can to show the people that he has to work with there of what he is wants to accomplish, and that he's accelerated to end the program to the best of his ability, because he feels as if he wants to return to the community and become a better citizen. So there are a number of things that have affected him throughout the time that he's been in prison. He served an awful lot of time, and a part of that is because they made an example of him, because he was a prior employee of the Department of Corrections. So he could have gotten a lot less sentence for these particular crimes. And I can also say that he has had no prior record. And his record has been limited to these particular instances with these three girls. He's not a chronic sex offender, although it may show in the record what people perceive, but that's not the case. Other than that, I can only say that I believe he's an excellent candidate for as early a parole as he can get, because he's already been served, as of this year, 21 years. So if he can get out 90 days ahead of time, it would be beneficial for him to continue on in the community. So,
Yes, sir. I do have one question. I'm sure you dealt with a high volume of inmates.
Yes.
And you see their case histories, and we see a high volume as well.
Right.
I'm asking you for an opinion, but what do you think that this sort of crime, considering the history, three victims, underage, all stationed, what do you think the sentences would have been on average?
I would say somewhere between 10 and 15 years.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Shane Sullivan, son of Tom Sullivan. I know we've been here before. This is our fourth hearing together. Our last one. This nightmare for me and my family is finally coming to an end. Whether it's, you know, this is granted for him or whether he gets out a few months after that. It's been a long time. When he went in, I just got out of college. Started teaching, my first teaching job. Been doing it for over 20 years, teaching and coaching kids. And I never saw this side of my father. I always saw that. The core values that we always talk about, the same things that I still try to instill in my students and my players. I don't think this thing will ever happen again. I know he'll have a lot of support from family and friends when he gets out. I know your job is a tough one to thank this job, but I appreciate you guys hearing us out over the last several years. Thank you.
My name is Sean Sullivan. I'm the one that he's, Mr. Johnson, he's referring to that important communication about after he was released. So if you have any questions for me, by all means, let me know. Again, we've been here, and I want to rehash what my brother just said. We're both teachers. We're both coaches. Him and my wife, we all teach in the same exact school. But I truly believe I am who I am today because of how my dad raised me. He was, you've heard a lot of things today, and I don't want to go over each and every one of them, but we're put on this earth to help other people. It's not about you, it's about helping other people. And that's what I do every day in my life. I have a master's degree in counseling. My brother has a master's degree in counseling. We both were guidance counselors and counselors at high school level. And as the state shifted into the testing era of AIMS testing and aging merit, guidance counselors weren't counseling anymore. I was given tests all day long. That wasn't what I signed up for to be a guidance counselor. So I went back to classroom. You had to go back to classroom first. And I'm a PE teacher now. And really, it's just a facade. I do more counseling in my PE classes than I've ever done in a guidance department my entire life. You can really reach kids because they'll talk to you about what's going on. And it's just important for us. That's just who my dad raised us to be. We're kind of thinking outside the box sometimes when it comes to how we're going to do what we do as far as helping people. But as far as the living conditions, I've lived in the same neighborhood since 2007. So it's a very tight neighborhood. I understand Mr. Wright's concerns about him coming out and having to deal with some stuff as far as that is concerned. I know he's probably going to have to register and go through everything he has to do with his parole. But I live in a cul-de-sac, and I know every single one of my neighbors, and we help each other. I guarantee we're not going to have any problems in my neighborhood if he's allowed to live with me. If he's not allowed to live with me, and that's based on whatever the conditions are, we have backup plans. We have other plans in place if whatever that, you know, because I have a son that is, he's going to be 16 this year, but I don't know if that's going to be a condition or not. Can he or can he not live with us? We'll have to just wait and see what that comes up. But if that doesn't work, we have another plan, and we have multiple plans in case he's not going to be on the street. I can promise you that. We will find a way to make it work. And the last thing I just wanted to say is I'm in year 25 as a teacher, and
it's been, you know, we, when this thing first happened, we went back and visited him the very first time, like the first Christmas that this happened. And then about 3 years later, we went back. And at that point in time, my dad said, I don't want to see you guys till I'm out. We haven't seen him in probably 17 or 18 years. Because it's too difficult the last day. When we're sitting there playing cards or talking or doing whatever, it's just way too difficult on him for us to have to get up and leave. And be this far apart. And I know that my point is, we're just, you know, I know you guys have a decision, and it'll be October, or be June, or be whatever. The sooner we come home, the better, in my opinion. So, if you have any additional questions for me as far as living arrangements or things like that, I can answer those questions. If not, I'm door for you.
Yes, sir.
So, I was asking the question about to make sure he was able to stay with his family. So. I am a little bit concerned. I'm looking at his release date, and he does have some probation left on there, but he has some parole. I'm not sure probation is going to be as restrictive as parole, but I do know that parole is very, very restrictive. And in my mind, I'm trying to think what would be best if he got out early and had to be on parole, which may alter all of the plans that you have, or whether if he was on probation, it may be easier to facilitate the plan that you have in place for him over a matter of months. That's kind of what my, that's the reason why I was asking those questions.
We have multiple options. It's just what the restrictions are going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a cabin in Happy Jack and a cabin in Sholo that we can use if that's what they need it to be. We just don't know what the plan is, so I'm just trying to stack up different options. So if one goes to the next, then I know what, I don't want to be able to say, oh, we don't have an option. I want to make sure we have all of our bases covered, but we have, I don't know what they are. Until they tell me what the conditions are, then I'll figure out a plan from there.
It's the same issue that Mr. Johnson brought up, but the thing that's troubling in this with the parole, the parole office investigating your house because that's the intended location. And so one of the things they're looking at with a sex offender is anybody under the age of 18. Normally they can't reside in a house with anybody under the age of 18, but there are, there's a lot of those rules are peer group, okay, but when the PO can approve it or disapprove it and make alterations to it or whatever, but it is kind of difficult. But you said that, you don't have any problem yourself with your father coming and living in your house with your 16-year-old son there, right?
No, sir, I do not.
So in your mind, even though you haven't, face-to-face with your father in a long time, you obviously communicate.
Me and my dad talk every Sunday at 7 a.m., and he talks to my brothers on Saturday.
Well, it's really good that you have a schedule like that, because without a schedule, you tend to get busy, and even in a case like that, it's like, oops, And so you've got good communication. And
absolutely. Every weekend we talk. If we're on vacation or playing, I coach a lot. He'll call me, and if I'm warming guys up, I'm like, hey, we're warming guys up. Give me a call in an hour. When I coach baseball, we do have an option because we don't know what that is going to be, but my brother's friend for 25 years has a house, and he's in Rome Bay, lives by himself, and said if it doesn't work out with Sean, he's more than welcome to stay with me. And that's in, Glendale. It's okay. In the Maricopa County area. So we just don't know what the plan is. We want to make sure we have a place if it's granted.
Right. Well, really, that's the thing, unless we don't know, we don't deal with probation. Adult probation is a different you know, that he would be responsible to is a different, actually a different organization than the parole officers, you know, so they, and they work different sides of the same things, or, you know, how it was that. So we're not familiar with what kind of restrictions come in those probations like that. You know, it's specifically ordered by the court, and all that, so there's all kinds of things, and I'm not sure. But the other question I have is, you know, you said you're very tight in your neighborhood and everything, and that's very commendable. I've lived in the same neighborhood for 30 years, and those people I never saw, you know, never home talked to or, you know, became friends with, but I think that's our society today. But the issue that you're going to have to deal with is he's going to be a registrable sex offender.
I know.
And I don't know, you know, and again, I don't know until I get paperwork in front of me that says he's registrable or the PO says he can't tell the degree of it. Some sex offenders have to register, and that's as far as it goes. It's information easily discovered by the public, but it's not specifically published. Other ones are the whole neighborhood is notified that this is the person, this is what they were, and this is what they did, and everything. Are any of your neighbors prepared for that?
I feel confident that I have a good enough relationship with my neighbors over the years that if I walked over and talked to them about what was going on, they would be supportive.
Okay. Well, that's, I mean, I would hope that if you want well at all, that they would have, you know, be supportive of me understanding.
We do have a unique area where we're not the typical, where you drive in and don't say hi to anybody. We're always out helping each other and doing things. And
but the notifications,
yeah,
they stand beyond that portion of your...
Yeah.
Okay. And are you prepared to have to deal with those sometimes if they come up?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Because it can be... What about your 16-year-old son? Does he know the whole history and everything?
We talked. I mean, when this happened, Blair was 6 months, he wasn't even, you know.
Right. Well, I understand.
So that first trip we took was...
Yeah. So, but if that's another important thing, that if, you know, if your father's going to live in the house, that you and your son is there, that your son needs to be a, you know, fully participating member of the group, you know, which includes full knowledge.
Yeah, he knows what's going on.
Okay, well, and that would be a concern of mine. I'm not as concerned about, you know, something happening to him, that your father would molest him or, you know, do something like that, as far as the psychological effect on him with that release and everything, if, you know, because there are people out there that keep things like that 100% away from their kids. And all of a sudden one day, you know, oh, by the way, Uncle Johnny did this, or your grandfather spent, you know, he wasn't away in Europe working, he was in prison in New Hampshire for the last 17 years or whatever, you know.
He knows.
Okay, well, that's good. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, just a quick
Mr. Connell?
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Just a quick commentary. These types of cases are difficult because we're dealing with at any of this, but we're dealing with real victims and real trauma. But I do want to say I know a lot of faulty heroes in this life, and I recognize the service that both you and your brother have provided this community with, the sort of people you've become and had to live with. And I do believe people can be redeemed. Again, tough case, because I'm not going to be dismissive of the victims, but it is meaningful, the sort of people that Mr. Sullivan's sons have become. So again, thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, I guess I'm nervous because I need to stay on. But it's very important to me as one voting member of the board, but I know the board in general has the same feelings too. It's very important to see the family and community support for an inmate that we're considering to, you know, to be released, because as we thought of saying, you guys went off to college, this happened, that happened, all these different things, and it came lonely. And if an inmate's been 20 plus years, 30 plus years in prison to come out and end up in a halfway house, and they're on their own because they don't have any support. It's much, much, much more likely that they're going to, be a repeat offender. And so family support like this is very important, and it's very commendable, because there's another thing we see is families quickly abandoning their loved ones because of crime they commit. And sometimes that's the proper thing to do. But if you really believe in redemption, like Mr. Pinellas was talking about, if you really believe in redemption and rehabilitation, then it's hard to totally abandon anybody. And you obviously haven't abandoned your father, none of you. So. And thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Anyone else wish to speak on Mr. Sullivan's behalf? I wish I had this many friends.
My name is Fred Siebel. I retired from the Arizona Department of Corrections in 2001. At one point in time, Tom was my supervisor. He was an excellent supervisor. I remember way back then in the 80s, he said, he made a passing comment. He says, Fred, continue on with your education. And I did. I went and got a master's degree while I was working for the Department of Corrections. And, he was a motivator. He was excellent with the inmates, excellent with co-workers or, the staff. I've been working in town for 20 years. And back in 1998, I had the opportunity to break my anonymity with Tom. At that time, I had 14 years clean and sober. So over the past 20 years, I've been able to share with him each of the 12 steps, what I've done to change my life. And that correlates over to his issues. And also, I'm a licensed counselor, and I can help him with community support groups when he gets out. I can be a backup person if family members are busy, as far as whenever he has to see his PO. I was a PO, and I can help him, if he needs transportation. I can help him with his driver's license. I can help him with the cell phone, smartphone, all those things. And I'm here to support him. I do have a spare bedroom, and I live in a senior community. It would be no problem. And, believe it, Tom, I had to qualify to get into that 12-step program with my alcohol abuse addiction. I addressed those issues, and like I said, I was able to share all of those things with Tom, and then he could take those pieces and see where he could help himself. And so I'm here to support him 100%. And to me, what's really important this morning is he does make this release in June, the way I understand it. I've seen him do his part. He's made his amends. He knows he needs to continue to work on his own issues, and he says he will, he commits to that. He's also donated not hundreds, thousands of dollars of items he made with woodwork and donated those to the community. And that's huge. I don't know of many inmates doing that. And I don't know of many inmates that have almost flawless, violent history, and that's huge. And it says a lot about his behavior. If you can go and live under those conditions and not get written up, that's huge. And I couldn't say enough good things about Tom. This is not an easy subject to talk about, but at some point in time, he's done 99% of his sentence. This would be the real important time to let him continue to prove himself out here. I want to thank each and every one of you. I don't take this lightly. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Sir, any questions?
I do have a question for you. Can you say you're a licensed counselor?
Yes, I'm PC.
You're familiar, and having your history with DOC, probably you're familiar with the SOT program.
Yes.
And everything.
Yes.
So my question to you, then, he's currently enrolled in the SOT, and I understand, it's kind of a shame that they push it out that far sometimes. But so he's in it. He's been in it for almost seven months. If he were to be an early release, it would be until June anyway, because that's when he becomes parole eligible, actually. if he's not finished with that program when he's released, is this the kind of program that he can transition into here and not lose anything of it? Because that's one thing we really like to see is completion of an SOT program before the release date.
There are community support groups that are free that will address these exact problems. And to a T, there's over 100 alternatives to the 12, AANA program. There's over 100 other issues in the community that are addressed with the same 12 steps. And he shared with me, there is in the 12 steps in that SOT program currently. So yes, I can help him with whatever, that with programs that would exactly apply. And it wouldn't cost money. And I can guide him into that situation.
Okay.
You're able to be addressed on a weekly basis.
Okay. And the 12 step, we don't normally recommend specific things, but those are two things that we recommend to inmates, especially if they have time to complete inside, because most of us have it. But the inmate and the AA, because of the 12 step programming, you don't have to be an alcoholic, you don't have to be a drug addict for the 12 step to help you progress. So.
And I've never supported him in every which way. And I call a spade a spade.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Well, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to address the board this morning? Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. My name is Judy Miles. I'm Tom's sister-in-law. This is hard because I want him home. I'm so sorry for the victims, but it's been over 20 years. He's done his time. He's been a role model there. And everything that my family and the Penn City and Tom City, it will happen. So I'm just asking to please let him come home for me. I'm sorry, I'm not strong enough. I just want him home.
Any questions from the board? We have no questions. Thank you very much, ma'am. No one else. I see. Okay. State your name again, please.
Yes, Dennis Short. I wanted to add something based on what I heard you guys communicating with each other, and that is that based on my communication with the Tom Comp Administrator, Herb Haley, parole is the only thing that he is required to do. He has no probation. And it is for 2.5 years upon release from the facility where he's at. That was passed by the legislature based on the sentence committing date. And they said that people would have to do that even beyond a sentence if necessary, so that they had some supervision.
Sentencing paperwork into 2.5 years probation or something like that, and a lot of times when you're working the sentencing document isn't what the way the law specifically states it. So that's good information for us, and we do appreciate that. And we consult the same person regularly.
Right.
I was just trying to be clear, because I'm not real clear on that, because the sentence didn't really say it clear. It just says that he was going to have some community supervision.
Yeah.
And I take community supervision to mean probation. It could be wrong. So
parole is with the Department of Corrections, probation is with the county.
Right, I understand that, but that's what I'm trying to understand. That if he has earned his credit date and the sentence end date, mm-hmm. that if he was going to be on supervised probation, it would be, if he was going to be on community supervision, I think it would be probation and not parole itself, as his sentence end date has already ended. So I'm just trying to just be clear, because that has...
The sentencing laws are, especially right around the time of this sentencing, they bounce from here and there and everywhere, and I...
just about any sentence can have a required amount of community supervision, which is then so apparent what it means under law that you're coming out of prison on a new idea, that you've got to do this much time under auspices of parole, is what he's asking.
Yeah, and their intent was that even if your sentence had expired, that you still had to go on parole for 2.5 years because they wanted to make sure there was a continuation of the
right. And we consult over there all the time too, because there's little nuances and, you know, always on this day, not that day, so it makes a difference.
And they're the experts.
Right. Okay. That's all right.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Yes. We really appreciate the clarification.
Yes.
All right. There's no one else that at this time is going to speak on behalf of Mr. Sullivan. So at this point, there'll be any other questions from the board at this point? Okay. So at this point, sir, I'm going to turn it back to you. And the board's going to be going into discussion shortly to make a determination. Before we do, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Tell us anything else you think that would be pertinent to the decision. So now is the time for that statement, sir.
Part of the things that I've learned in this program and since I've been here is an important thing called consent. And consent to me now means to freely give permission for something and to both people be emotionally and intelligently equal. You know, that's really important, and it requires honesty to have consent, and it also requires an understanding of what's going to happen. And I also understand that the responsibilities of parole, and I know that parole is a temporary release from prison for a specific purpose, you know, which is to be on the streets or to go home, and it's a temporary release. It's a temporary release before your sentence is completed, and you get that temporary release based on the promise of good behavior. And I give you that promise. I give you my promise that if you release me on parole, I will give you good behavior. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The board will be having any discussion now. We'll be talking amongst ourselves and making a decision. You may think we're addressing you, but we'll be talking amongst ourselves, so just remain silent and stay on the phone. And once we've made a decision, we'll get back to you. And then you know from the past, you can hear everything we have to say. And in a few minutes, we'll be back with you, okay? The board is now in discussion. So this is, it's definitely an interesting situation. Mr. Sullivan is very articulate. He seems to have a good grasp of the principles, the expectations. He's makes some beautiful furniture. When you look at the sentencing and everything, I know a lot of times it's a wonder how some sentences are handled, and turn around other times it's a wonder how familiar they were, but with 3 counts of the child less stat as concurrent to the consecutive supply. The sentences that he's finishing now, I would expect it to be concurrent with them all 4 consecutive to the 3rd child molest charge. But under that circumstance, it would have been my 51-year sentence, barring for the next consecutive sentence. So, the length of time is I've never called it average, but it's in that kind of room where you see it go. But My biggest concern at this point in time is the SOT trainer. For a little day until June, so there's still 5 months left that Mr. Sullivan can complete the SOT there, and I don't know if there's any way the board could put a qualification in the condition of release to a very specific type class, although we could talk about sex offender programming. But with the SOT in progress, and the earliest release date would be until June anyway, and if time comes, as told Mr. Sullivan, that October would be his release date, I, as one voting member, would be more inclined to have Mr. Sullivan continue there in New Hampshire so we can have a seamless program and get that under his belt before he is released. And which at least in some way we can guarantee him the completion of that course before his parole eligibility date. And like I said, that would be just 4 months and then on 4 months, and 4 months is can be an eternity when you're locked in a prison and you're waiting for your loved ones to come home. But I'd really like to hear some discussion from my fellow board members at this time. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I agree with you. I think you've given a pretty good summary of the situation we're confronted with, and I agree with your position. I do want to say, because I touched upon this earlier, that these cases are difficult because they involve real victims and real trauma. I think if we were dealing with an individual that had some sort of personal stress or trauma and they sank into some other form of addiction, the community as a collective would be a bit more forgiving about it. But in fairness, I believe that some of those other addictions and compulsions also have victims as well, and I sometimes question the fairness of those views when we're talking about people's individual traumas and their compulsions, which we see all the time. But there's still a great responsibility that this board has regarding the victims and whether or not an individual inside the Department of Corrections has received adequate treatment before being returned to the community. And I think it might just be most practical for him to complete his SOP being closer to his actual end date. That's where I'm at.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Miller, could you just allow me just to go outside of discussion? I'm just trying to see if we can check to see if he has parole or probation.
I don't have anything to show that information.
So is it normal for a person that's got their earned release credit date done that they would still have parole after their
depending on what the sentencing docs would say.
Right.
The sentencing docs would say that whether he had parole or he had probation. The only thing that I have available to me is the dates that you guys have already discussed, his earned release credit date and his sentence end date. I don't have anything regarding probation or parole.
Okay, thank you. So that's my question. It's kind of changed my way of thinking, because I was thinking he finishes the program in July of 17. He has a earned release credit date of October, at which time he would be getting out. If he was to get out at that time, and if he's not on parole, I'm thinking he would be on probation. If he's on probation, I was thinking that that would give the family an opportunity to work with the probation department to figure out exactly what his status would be, or where he would be, or what kind of control. So just a little bit confused about it, and I can't find in the court records. I just went through here times, and it wasn't clear. It just says that he would have some community supervision afterwards. It didn't even say how long the community supervision would be. So I don't know if that means probation or parole, but I do understand the explanation that we just actually had. I would like to see him complete his programming that he has on July 17th, and then he has a release date of October, according to his document from the prison where he's at now, of October 3rd of 2019, that's his earned release credit date at that time, so he'll be able to be released and come home. Right now, I'm just kind of confused because I want him to complete his programming, and that would be on July, then he has an earned release credit date of October, according to the document I'm looking at. He has an early credit date of October, and I think at that time, if he has an early release credit date, that he would get out, and then he would be on home arrest. He could get out, you know, he has an early credit date, he wouldn't be on home arrest, which would be another complication on behalf of the family. But I think if he gets out on that date, he don't have home arrest, whether it's parole or whether it's probation, that when he's released, you know, it gives the family the opportunity to know that he's going to be released on this date. If he's going to be on parole, they can work and figure out what's going to be the requirements for parole. If he's going to be on probation, they can figure out what the requirements are going to be for probation, because if we release him earlier than that, then he's going to go out on home arrest.
No, he wouldn't go on home arrest unless the board voted for
him. Okay, he only has those 2 months, those 3 months left that he would get out if he got out, if he went out on early parole. But I was just a little bit confused about that. But I think that, I do think that he's done his time, he's done a good job, he's earned some release. I just would like to see him complete the program that he's in on July 17th, and then he becomes parole eligible. He's not even eligible for parole until what, June?
Right.
June. If we let him out in June, then he'll just have 1 month that he didn't get to, that he didn't finish that program over the year programs.
Thank you so very much. Just a couple of comments that I want to make, and then I don't have the answer to it. Just for the record, you know, because we have to put we don't have to, but we try to put everything in the record. We do have this letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office dated January 9, 2019, and of course they recommendation that the board should not grant early release. Because of position, his point of position and so forth. I think that I don't have the same concerns that Mr. Johnson has. I think that this board, this is just my, as one board member, I think that this board needs to do what it needs to do, and from just as one board member, I think is that we continue him on to continue in New Hampshire. Then he completes his date. And then that would be a decision, then at that point, it would be a decision for the Department of Corrections here. If he's not released that early, then I would suggest that we put that 6 months in there, and then he will come back for the board 6 months if he's not released in 6 months. So that's my feeling, just as one board member, that we continue him as he is, and that's just an opportunity to complete that SOP program, and it will see where he is. But I'm not as concerned about him as I would be of some other inmates, because with the expertise that we have observed here from family members as well as from former colleagues, I think they would take care of that. So I would not have the same concerns as I might with some others, because they will work with parole officers or with probation, whomever, because they have already done that homework, and I'm sure they will continue to do that homework. Thank you, sir.
I have a question for you. This is your vast knowledge of the system. When if the board was to decide, vote to release Mr. Sullivan at his parole eligibility date. Is there a way we can say, you know, that yes, he's eligible, we'll release him on parole, but he has to finish that SOT before he's actually released? Can we put that kind of stipulation in?
I would not want to do that, sir.
Okay.
I would not want to do that. I think just let the process work its way out.
Okay, well, I think that's part of it. I'm not near as experienced as you are.
Sir, the family use their expertise with their supporters, some of their expertise with all these wardens and former wardens in the room. And others, some few out there who are supporting.
My biggest concern is not so much that Mr. Sullivan wouldn't want to, you know, do something here. I'm uncomfortable with breaking the continuance of that course. You know, you've got so much to be done, and then all of a sudden you go stop it, and this guy started something somewhere else.
Based on what we know, Mr. Chairman, is that he would have completed that course by in 6 months, I mean, whenever. He started in July last year, July this year, he would have completed the course based on what we know at this time.
With his motivation, I'm sure he will finish it by then or not, if not sooner. I'm going to go ahead and I am going to make a motion based on everything we've heard today and the circumstances we have. I'm going to make a motion to, at this time, deny written parole after discharge or arrest for Mr. Tom Sullivan, ADC number 137264, and not ask for a 20-hour set off so that he will be, if he is still incarcerated at the time of eligibility, then he would be able to come back in front of the board and we can check status on that class and everything again at that point in time. And so that would be my motion, and I'll do the reasonings after we vote.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, seconded by Dr. Wright, agreed by Mr. Pinones. Mr. Dowson?
I agree. I think those figures are close.
I agree. Okay. The reasons will be, and this has to go back to the original offense. It was a serious and immediate offense, and the trauma to the victims, aiding the victims, multiple victims. And actually, with the type of information we have, I'd say you can harass them. Too many checkboxes on this. Pretty much unless the actual board members has a bad attitude about it on the news. So Mr. Sullivan?
Yep.
Okay, you heard the discussion, and you heard our decision, correct?
To deny.
To deny at this time?
Yep.
Okay, and did you hear the reasons I listed, which basically go back to the original offense?
Correct.
Okay, and continuing that SOT, sir, that's a big issue. In these type of cases, we're using the best of luck, and actually, the more hopes that we don't see you again, that you get down to your course and you'll be released, and you'll be able to interact with your family and return to the community. But if you were still incarcerated in 6 months, the Department of Corrections will certify you for another hearing and you will come back in front of us and we'll talk again.
Right.
All right. Either way, I do want to wish you the best of luck. You're making great strides. We have great support, a lot of good friends. And hopefully, when you are released, you'll be able to rent a lot of furniture and maybe even more importantly, a lot of toys for a lot of kids.
So this is what you're hearing, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all. And I thank all of you for coming. I thank all of you for being so supportive of Mr. Sullivan. And you do have to make a tough decision.
Services, and I think they will follow.
Hopefully you can have a better day. Thank you.